Welcome to the Hot Lava Podcast. Kevin Acey, Padres beat writer. I'm in Los Angeles. Jay Posner, sports editor of the Union Tribune. Jay's in San Diego. And Jay, the Padres will be back in San Diego playing again this year. First playoff game at home in front of fans in 16 years. Today, we will talk about the first two games in the series, NL Division Series against the Dodgers. And, you know, we should talk about what happened in New York over the weekend. Jay, where do you want to start?
Well, I do think it will be great to have a game or two games here this weekend. My tickets already showed up yesterday in my account. The Padres wasting no time getting those out to season ticket holders for at least game three was what I noticed. So that's good. I think we should start with what happened in New York. I mean, we said when we did this last week that we would be back on Tuesday, and you would either be in Los Angeles or you would be at your home here in San Diego, and you're in a hotel, which is where you are a lot over this 6 or 8 month period. But hey, what's more fun than playoff baseball, Kevin? I mean, even when you don't get to sleep and you fly across the country yesterday and you write a good story about Mike Clevinger, who's been waiting 2 years for this day. But let's start with New York. Friday night, Yu Darvish was fantastic. The Padres beat up on Max Scherzer, and maybe Scherzer wasn't 100%. Maybe he was. Doesn't really matter. You know, he was out there, and the Padres jumped on him early and often. What stood out from that game or from the weekend even for you?
For me, the intensity of the playoffs is amazing. Now, I will be really interested to see what happens with this Dodger Stadium crowd, 56,000 people. It's always the loudest place in the majors because they get an extra 10 to 15,000 over anybody else. But what happens in New York is they turn on you if you're the home team. So the home field advantage becomes almost an advantage to the other team, because the Padres, and I've talked to several of them, are standing there in pregame introductions. The crowd is going nuts. It's let's go Mets. There's cursing at the Padres. The towels are waving. Josh Bell hits a home run in the first inning.
Right, right.
Silence. Every ensuing home run off Max Scherzer, and there were three more, and is booze. Max Scherzer is booed. Everything the Mets start to do is booed. No longer is the crowd standing at two strikes as they were early in the game. No longer are they cursing and booing every close call that the umpire doesn't make on a ball or a strike. I mean, that's how intense New York is and how intense the playoffs is. But then when the visiting team gets the home crowd out of it, it switches, and that was remarkable. And then, of course, the two pitching performances. I mean, Yu Darvish all year, but against the Mets, and good news for the Padres, against the Dodgers for the most part, has been really good. And then Joe Musgrove, wow. He now has the only no-hitter in team history, and he has just a fantastic performance on a giant stage. He even has the benefit of being mentally tough enough to overcome Buck Showalter's mind games, which only adds to the lore of that game. So those are the things that really stood out for me.
Yeah, it's interesting because I think the Musgrove performance on its own was incredible. And to me, it's basically that and Kevin Brown in game one of the 98 series against Randy Johnson in Houston. And I got to give a nod to our friend Tom Krasovic, our colleague Tom Krasovic, who noted before the series that Darvish was in that position, and the Padres were in a position where pitching could do that. And it reminded him a little bit of 98, and Darvish had that kind of a game. And then Musgrove exceeded it on Sunday. And yes, what Showalter did is going to make it seem even bigger in the future, because more people will remember the game because of that. It's like there have been great pitching performances in the playoffs that get talked about, and the postseason that get talked about all the time. You know, Jack Morris and all those kind of games that live on forever. But when there's something like what happened Sunday with the umpires checking Musgrove, that just adds to the lore, as you said. And I think my favorite moment out of that was Alfonso Marquez, who was in this weird position of having to do this. And it was almost like you couldn't tell, but I'd love to have the microphone there. It was like he was asking Musgrove, like, okay, I'm going to check your ears now. Is that okay?
Yep. That's exactly what happened.
Yeah. And it was like this sort of moment of being courteous during all this. Like, I'm just not going to reach out and, you know, grab your ears. I'm going to ask you about it first. It just struck me as funny. I did think, and Musgrove's comments afterwards about Showalter being desperate and the Mets being desperate, I did think there was certainly a hint and an air of desperation about all of that.
Well, let me tell you, there's a couple things that really, you know, I thought were instructive. I thought were, you know, fascinating. First off, the New York media, I mean, Max Scherzer's a bum now. You know, DeGrom shouldn't be resigned. I mean, I'm not saying I disagree with the DeGrom thing. I'm just saying, like, the New York media goes like the fans go there. They're really hard on the team, or you're a genius. And let me tell you something. If that had worked, if Joe Musgrove had allowed two runs in that inning,
right,
Buck Showalter would
– statue.
There would be a statue. It may be in Manhattan, but definitely in Queens. There would be a statue of him because it would have been the greatest move ever. Now he's an idiot. It happens in New York, and it's just bigger. And here's the other thing, folks. Yes, there is an East Coast bias, all right? They're 3 hours ahead of us. It's the, you know, the media capital. But also, you know what? Their teams go to the playoffs.
Yeah.
The Padres were the only team playing. The Padres and the Mets were the only baseball teams playing that night. It's the playoffs. There are millions of people watching. So now more people have Joe Musgrove in their consciousness. More people know that Trent Grisham had a terrible season. Do you know that 99.9% of baseball fans didn't know Trent Grisham had a terrible season until he had a really good division series? It's the playoffs. That's where the Padres will get noticed and get more of their due that we all feel that they don't get. Well, this was their seventh time to the postseason. This was their 11th series. This was their fourth series victory. Like, I mean, they really haven't been very good. So this is a really big moment for the Padres.
Right. And the last time they had a moment like this was the Cardinals series a couple of years ago. And I do think that was big. I mean, that was a nice comeback and all that stuff, but it sort of disappeared quickly the next week. And it was just different. There were no fans. They went on to play the Dodgers in the, you know, a sterile environment in Texas. You know, was not the same as what we're going to see this week. And we'll get to that in just a second. We do need to talk about Trent Grisham and what he did over the weekend. The one thing I thought was Bob Melvin did a really nice job this year with the Padres. He created a great culture, I think, for the team. You know, strategic decisions, I'm not sure how much they made a difference. You and I agreed with some. We disagreed with some. You know, you and I disagreed on what we disagreed on. But I do think Melvin is getting, I don't want to say too much credit, but he's getting credit for something where it was sort of a no-brainer decision to play Trent Grisham. Now, he could have instilled some confidence in Grisham. You know, I don't know what kind of talks they had or anything, and all that stuff is great. But the idea of actually playing Trent Grisham, that was his only choice, was to play Trent Grisham. We talked about it on Friday that they were not going to start Jose Azokar in that big outfield. They were not going to start Will Myers in center. You know, it was play Trent Grisham and hope he runs into one. And he wound up running into two for home runs. He wound up, you know, on Sunday night reaching base all four times. And all credit to Trent Grisham. He had other moments during the season where he did this, where he was good. He had a lot more moments where he was bad, and he would be the first to admit it. He also made a couple very nice catches. One which I thought was the one coming in, I thought was, okay, you should make that play. The one Sunday night was a great play. That was a lot of ground to cover, the walls there. I'm sure the crowd is loud as the ball was flying out there. There's a lot to focus on. That was a really, really, really good play at a big moment for the Padres. And Grisham was, you know, along with the pitchers, he's your MVP over the weekend in New York. Now, he may turn around this week, and it's not going to be easy, you know, for him against the Dodgers with all the lefties that they have. But he already, you know, he had his moment over the weekend, and all credit to Grisham for that. He was big. Bell had a big home run. You know, Machado was okay. Juan Soto had a couple big hits. So Machado failed in a couple situations. You know, his home run came when they were up 6-0. He did have a big hit on Sunday, but Soto was good. I mean, he still didn't provide any slugging, but the hit on Sunday night was huge. Going from 4-0 to 6-0 was basically the end of the series at that point. So the downside, real quick, Jake Cronenworth didn't have a hit. The first base platoon of, so to speak, of Myers and Drury did not have a hit, although Myers did hit the ball hard a couple of times. Those guys could be big this week, though, because, again, with all the lefties, they're going to need Myers and Machado and Drury to really, you know, Austin Nola, who had a good weekend, to really come up against the Dodgers.
Yeah, if some other people keep hitting, and quite honestly, if Manny Machado hits better, he did not have a good series. You were generous with him. Now, of course, yes, he had a couple hits, and it could even have been bigger. He put them in position to even score more on Sunday. But, you know, at one point, I think he finished 3 for 13. He was 1 for 11, and at one point, I think he was 1 for 10, and he'd struck out 5 times. So, and he left people on base, like 7 people on base. He's terrible with runners in scoring position. He's not good in the playoffs. All right. Look, Manny Machado might be your MVP for the regular season, but we just talked about what Trent Grisham did. And, you know, the playoffs is what a lot of people treat the regular season like. You know, the emails that I start getting in the second inning on June 26th in Colorado about how a guy sucks and they'll never win with him. Well, that's the postseason, folks. That's not June. Okay. Yeah. You know, you got to put it together enough good games to get to the postseason, and then it matters. If that's what you're going to expect of the Padres, this is what it's all about. And Manny hasn't been good. The good news is he's been good against the Dodgers in his career. He's been good against the Dodgers with the Padres, and he's been the only guy who's been good against Julio Urias, who's pitching tonight. But we'll talk about that. As long as some other people can keep hitting, we can still have the feel good story about Will Myers and his defense over there. But Will Myers needs to hit. You're absolutely right. Yeah. Brandon Drury needs to hit. Absolutely. Jake Cronenworth needs to hit. Again, he'll be facing lefties. But look, when they've been going good, this has not been about left-right for Jake Cronenworth and Trent Grisham. They can hit lefties when they're going good. And from my understanding, and it's just amazing how difficult this game is, Trent Grisham hit rock bottom and said, okay, I'm going to start swinging. Okay, I understand you can be like, what? You're not a Major League Baseball player, folks, and neither am I. This is I almost said a bad word. This is a really difficult game. And Trent Grisham's strength has been his plate discipline his entire life. It made him a first round pick. It got him to the majors. It had him be practically, if there'd been an all-star game in 2020, he might've been one. Yeah. I mean, this guy's got a lot of confidence. It took that confidence getting shattered, and he did not strike out in the division series. And, you know, a lot of times we can't tell from our vantage point, wherever that is in the stadium. Of course, the box really helps us on TV, but we can't tell. And so sometimes you'll see a close pitch and you'll wonder, is in your mind right away, is it a ball or a strike? Well, this season, past seasons, you go, oh no, Trent Grisham knows that was a ball. This season, when he took a pitch, you go, oh, well, Trent just took a strike. In the division series, it was back like I was watching Trent Grisham 2020. And it was that kind of confidence, that kind of plate awareness, strike zone awareness. And so it was like, from my understanding, from people that I talked to, yeah, it really was that simple. It's not simple. He's been doing a lot of work. But I can't be that guy, or I'm just going to keep going up there. I'm not going to play, and I'm not going to help this team.
So, all right, well, let's go on to what's really ahead, which is a series against the Dodgers, who have, I mean, there's no sugarcoating it. They have completely dominated the Padres over the last decade, but certainly in the immediate past. What is it, 23 out of 28 that the Dodgers have won? They were 14-5 against the Padres this season. 4 of the Padres' 5 wins came in the Padres' final at bat. 3 of them were in extra innings when they had the Manfred man on second base, who does not exist now. So who knows what will happen there. This is a huge undertaking. There's a lot of places to start. I guess we should start with the Dodgers won 111 games this year. Not a lot of teams in baseball history have been good enough to win 111 games. The interesting thing to me is you look at their lineup and the top 5 guys most nights, the top 4 especially, and then Justin Turner in the second half, those guys are as good as there is. I mean,
it's unreal. Yes.
I mean, especially the top 3, where you start with Betts, Trey Turner, and Freddie Freeman. Will Smith is always dangerous, always seems to kill the Padres.
Justin Turner always seems to kill the Padres.
So that's 5 guys right there. the rest of their lineup, it's remarkable how bad it is when you look at some of their numbers. You know, Cody Bellinger is a shell of what he used to be. Max Muncy was not good this year. Trace Thompson had some moments. Joey Gallo is, I can't even believe Joey Gallo's on the team. Gavin Lux was pretty good and got hurt. Chris Taylor was not good this year, but it doesn't matter because those, for one thing, those guys do still hit home runs. Dodgers hit a lot of home runs and they always seem to come up with timely hits, at least against the Padres. Some one or two of those guys has a big hit a game against the Padres. And the other side of it is the Dodger pitching, the starting pitching is really good. Really, really good. Julio Urias, Clayton Kershaw will pitch games one and two. Both of them have ERAs in the low twos, I believe, not just in the twos, but in the low twos. And look, it's hard to score against the Dodgers. Tyler Anderson had a great year. You know, I don't know what anybody can expect from Tony Gonsolin. They lost Dustin May. I don't know if he'll be back. They lost Walker Buehler. They're still really good. They're tough to score against. I think the only hope is to keep it close and get into the bullpen. Of course, I'm also the guy who said the Padres aren't going to win games against the Mets by scoring 6 and 7 runs. They won one game with 7. They won one game with 6. So I'll let you go from there.
Well, that's the first thing I thought of when you said that's the only hope. And look, getting into the Dodgers bullpen is not like getting into other teams' bullpens either, as you know. Now, their bullpen has been a little suspect. And so, and I certainly think that you're right. I mean, that is the better play. But look, how about they worry about getting past Urias and Kershaw? As far as Kershaw, they only faced twice this year. One of them was in April and one was in July. He pitched well in both. Urias owned them, and especially in September, I think the final two, both. Yeah. I mean, the last one, they weren't even expecting it. Like, they were like 5 innings and out. Well, he was only at like 80 or 75 pitches after 5 innings. Yeah. He finished, I think, 93 pitches in 6 innings, shut out. I think a couple hits. Manny Machado has 3 home runs off him. They're the only extra base hits the Padres have off him. I believe Manny's the only person that has multiple hits off him. They hit something like 169 against him this year. Mm-hmm. This was not, as facing one guy goes, this was not a small sample size. It was 4 starts. The Dodgers won all 4. He was 3-0. So, the guy's won 17 games. He won 20 games last year as a 2-1 something ERA. Yeah. He's going to be the Cy Young winner probably.
I don't know about that, but we'll see.
Yeah, I understand. It's not the MVP,
man. I think Alcantara will
at
win
some point, maybe next year when Urias wins 18 games, they're going to give him like a cumulative Cy Young. The best.
Nobody talks about wins anymore, but here's a guy who, when he's out there, the Dodgers win, whether it's him or anybody else. I think Alcantara will win the Cy Young Award, but that's all beside the point here. Urias, I mean, I'm looking now, the Dodgers are -225 favorites. That's a big number, especially in the playoffs. And it's because of a combination of Urias pitching for the Dodgers and Mike Clevenger pitching for the Padres, who, look, Clevenger's had his moments with the Padres, and he's had a lot of moments where we haven't seen him or he hasn't been good. He was not good against the Dodgers this year. For the most part, I mean, I was at the one game in L.A. where he pitched pretty well, and then it all just fell apart. And Will Smith got a couple big hits off him, and then Muncy got the crushing hit off him.
If he can pitch like that tonight, Jay.
Yeah.
The Padres, he'll be out before he gets to that point where in the 6th inning, those guys have a chance to see him a third time. He'll be gone. Yep. So if he can pitch like that tonight, the Padres will be in good shape, provided that
and so who's when he leaves after 4 or 5, is it Nick Martinez?
If he goes after 5, you'll see Nick Martinez, and then Nick Martinez you would hope would go 5-6, and then
or 6-7,
I'm sorry, and then you would see probably Garcia. I don't know what type part of the order's up. It could be Suarez.
Yeah.
But Suarez is your 8th inning guy. Suarez for 2 months has been exactly what they signed out of Japan. I mean, it's remarkable. He's
no, he really
the last
is.
2 months, he has been, the guy who, if they hadn't have gone out and gotten Taylor Rogers and Josh Hader, who between them, for as bad as they were the best closer in the game, besides Edwin Diaz this year. have gotten the most saves for the Padres. And so I think their bullpen is in a really good shape. I can't tell you about Adrian Morahone. The thinking within the organization, and Adrian Morahone did not deny it, was that he was overwhelmed. That it was the playoffs. It was super loud. He couldn't hear pitch calm. He missed a play that was on. It was a big moment, and Adrian Morahone did not respond. He threw 25 fastballs out of 29 pitches.
Yeah, he also didn't get any help from the guy behind the plate that night. But again, he didn't pitch very well.
That guy was squeezing everybody, but yes.
Yeah, he didn't pitch well at all. I shouldn't just say very well. He didn't pitch well at all, and it was a big moment. Their bullpen's in good shape. I'm not sure how many of those guys you can really trust. I was counting the other night when Musgrove was pitching, and he was getting through those innings quickly after the first one, which was like, okay, now he's at five innings, and he's right around six. I think it was 59 pitches maybe through five, and it was like, wow, this is pretty good, because now he can – you figure if nothing falls apart, he can get through at least seven. And then they can, if they need to, they can go to Suarez and Hader, and they can avoid. Basically, I was looking for ways to avoid almost anybody else in the bullpen at this moment. And that includes Garcia, who can be good, but there's just something about seeing him out there. There's just always this sense of you never quite know. And right now, the two guys that I think anybody would have confidence in are Suarez and Hader. Nick Martinez, I think, is probably next on that list, then Garcia. And beyond that, I mean, it's, you know, when you get into Hill and Manaea and Morahone and Steven Wilson, I mean, those are guys I don't think you're going to see if the Padres have a lead of any kind.
What you're talking about brings up, when do you have to use these guys? That three-game series, and the difference between a three-game series and a five-game series is giant if you're going to go the four or five.
Right.
That loss went as well as it could for the Padres, right? If they're down by a run, Bob Melvin trusts Adrian Morahone, but he has to keep him in for three batters, and all three reach base and the bases are loaded. Yep. At that point, Bob Melvin has to make a decision. We're down by one. Even if I bring in God right now, he's probably going to allow a run. Okay. Right. Because, you know, there's no outs and the bases are loaded. So I'm not going to do it. Let's say the Padres were tied. He makes a different decision possibly, and he burns Robert Suarez or has Josh Hader pitch. And who knows what Josh Hader's like the next day. What I'm saying is, like, when do you have to use? When do you choose to use your relievers? Hey, a blowout loss isn't always the worst thing. Like, you win game one and you get blown out in game two and you didn't have to waste any pitchers, and now you're fresh for that home game, game three. That's just an example of how, like, things have to kind of go right for you sometimes too, in terms of the decisions that you're forced to make as a manager.
Yeah. And it's like, I don't think, and this week is different because there is no off day between four and five. So that's another thing to look at. But there's also the part of it where the Padres were not going to be eliminated on Saturday night, and that helped Melvin's decision making. He was able to manage differently than Showalter, you know, who had to go to Diaz, or felt he had to go to Diaz really early. The Padres were in a position where they didn't need to do that, and I didn't have an issue with Melvin in that spot trying Morahone there and not using Garcia and Suarez, because then, if you are going to go to Sunday, now you're going to be asking those. You might be asking those guys to pitch 3 days in a row, and I didn't think that was a decision that he had to make. It's kind of the same thing tonight. You know, if things go sour tonight in a hurry, they can use some of those other guys to get through it and not have to use, you know, Suarez and Hader in a game. It was interesting to me that the guys on TV kept talking about how, you know, when will they go to Hader, and Hader is a multi-inning guy. Hader's not a multi-inning guy anymore. It's like, just look at they kept talking about, when do they go to Josh Hader? It's like, they'll go to Josh Hader in the ninth inning. That's pretty much when you go to Josh Hader. He's not a multi-inning guy. He was, but it looked like in Milwaukee a couple of years ago, he/they decided that he wasn't that guy anymore. And the Padres, have they used him once in a sit-down, get-up get back up situation?
No, because there was an opportunity where they had that opportunity to do it. And Bob Melvin talked about how he hadn't done it. We were talking about it before Bob Melvin talked about it.
Yeah.
And then no matter what, though, Bob Melvin did say, and I'm sure so he must said in his production meetings before every game with, you know, whoever the heck did the game, ESPN. Mm-hmm. But he was talking with us. You could use him for four outs. Sure. Look, people say that all the time. I mean, yeah. The Mets media was talking about how Edwin Diaz doesn't do good when it's not the ninth inning and things aren't on the line. All those years in Milwaukee, or I should say the previous two seasons in Milwaukee, all I would hear was how Josh Hader goes one inning and also does not do well in non-save situations. We saw it here a few times. You saw Diaz wasn't as sharp as normal when he came in on Saturday. So you could say all you want about guys. Closers like to close.
Yeah. No, there's no. And I think some guys don't have a problem.
Oh, sure.
Doing the four out, five out type thing. And Hader was a guy who didn't for a while, but for whatever reason, that has not been what he's done lately. So I don't think we can start looking, you know, with one out in the eighth inning, if the Padres have a lead, like, when are they going to go to Josh Hader?
Now, on the record, Bob Melvin has said, don't be surprised if I do that. But I'll tell you that I will be a little surprised. But it's going to depend on the situation. Look, if it's, if it's game four, they're trying to get to game five.
That's.
And he's used some guys, and Josh Hader has been throwing well, right? Like, I mean, yeah. Okay.
Well, and it's like, okay, there's two outs in the eighth and Freddie Freeman's coming up.
Season could be over. Josh Hader's our guy right now.
Then maybe that's different. But I think in general, to start thinking like Hader's going to suddenly turn into a two-inning guy is not something. Going back to the Dodgers, I don't even know who's going to close for them. I mean, one of their worst reliever this year was probably their closer in Craig Kimbrell, and they have said that he's not going to be the closer anymore.
One of the Padres' victories this year was because the Dodgers were trying to get Craig Kimbrell right.
Yeah, that's right.
They weren't even managing or whoever pulls the levers for the Dodgers. Mm-hmm. Sorry, Dave. They weren't even managing to win that game. They were managing to let Craig Kimbrell pitch.
Yeah. So I don't know what they're going to do. I mean, I think Evan Phillips has been their best guy, you know, for pretty much all of the season out of the bullpen. So we'll see who they use. It doesn't seem like they have a shortage of, like most teams, a shortage of guys that come in and throw 98, because that's basically what a reliever does these days for most.
And they also don't have have a problem. Guys like lefties facing righties, righties facing lefties. They're just like this interchange. They might have a problem with the closer, but they have like these interchangeable 7-8 inning guys that it's just unreal how good they are.
Now, all that said, and Tom Krasvick wrote this last night. It's in the paper today. It's online. And, Bryce wrote about how the Padres, of course, the Padres are confident they can flip the script against the Dodgers. I thought Tom made some good points about the pitching and where the Padres are in their pitching. Clevinger, obviously, is whatever struggles he had this year, he's far better off right now than he was when he went into that game in 2020. Darvish would go tomorrow. Then they'd come home and either Musgrove or Snell would go in three or four. It'll be interesting to see how that plays out. It's Snell's turn, but it would be regular rest for Musgrove. And then game five would be sort of a, you know, who knows what would happen. But what's your sense on games three and four? Is it going to depend on where the series stands, or are they going to decide ahead of time, we're just going to stay in rotation? Because Snell has pitched well against the Dodgers.
I think they maybe decide after tonight, even if they, you know, I think they decide after tonight, but I think that it's Musgrove. I think it's Musgrove. That was my sense on Sunday night that they were leaning Musgrove. But, you know, if you're facing elimination, you can't risk that you're going to get good Snell.
Right. No, so that's a good
very point. Good benefit to give Joe an extra day at this point in the season. Sure, absolutely. But Joe Musgrove pitched a heck of a game. Joe Musgrove will be locked in to pitch in front of at Petco in a playoff game. And look, we've gone over our goal, but it's a playoff. I'll say about this whole confidence thing, I do have the sense they have more confidence. You can't, if you've watched as the team that you cover get their brains beat out, not their confidence just shattered. I mean, they'll come in and win game one of a series, and then the Dodgers, it's like they flip a switch and they win games two, three. If you've watched that a lot, I'm going to admit that there's that's hard to get out of my consciousness. It just is. And so you know that I'm big on that, not projecting onto other people and not like and trying to be honest about what color glasses maybe that I'm wearing, whatever the opposite of rose colored are or what I'm wearing. But you can't help but when you come to Dodger Stadium and it's the postseason, but I'm standing in the place that I've stood all these times watching the Padres stretch and take batting practice. It's hard. It's hard to envision this team beating the Dodgers. That said, they are in as good a position as they have been in a long time to do so because of the pitching.
Right. And I think it, I think the key, and this is, if they win tonight, obviously that's a huge thing and it changes a lot of situations. Otherwise, the key is tomorrow night, obviously with Darvish. You know, look, he's been their best pitcher all year. Start in and start out. He goes six innings every time, usually seven. And if you have to have one guy where the season is basically on the line, which it would be tomorrow, because I don't see any way this team's winning three straight. They might win three out of five against the Dodgers. I don't see them winning three out of three against the Dodgers. They need to win one of these games in LA. I think Darvish is the guy that you would say, okay, I want him out there, you know, for this huge game. And I think they would have to play tomorrow night's game if they lose tonight, like the season is on the line. You know, look, if they come home 1-1 and they have Snell and Musgrove pitching in games 3 and 4 and they don't have to see Urias and Kershaw, although Tyler Anderson really, really pitched great against them, at least in one game where I think they hit him early and then he retired like, what was it, like 18 in a row? Along those lines. So
every time I watch it, I go, how is this happening?
I know. So it's a huge task ahead. We can talk on Friday back here after we see the first two games and talk about what's ahead for the weekend. But it's not a situation where, you know, I know the Padres did it in 84 against the Cubs, came home, won three games. This would not even be three games at home. This would be, you know, three games with one in LA. And you're playing, and the 84 Cubs were not the 111 win Dodgers of this year. It's a tall task, but hey, it's not impossible. And it's a lot more fun talking about this and being able to watch at least three more games than it is watching other teams.
It's a really interesting dynamic. I really wish they had reseeded. I think that's how it should have been, but here they are. And listen, it'll be interesting to see the picks from MLB Network, ESPN. I did not see in all the brackets, I did not see an SD, you know, next to LA in when the predictions were made last time. I did not see that anywhere. And the Padres certainly noticed that. That's neither here nor there. That's not why they went out and won. No one has talked about us against the world or anything. But, like, they were not – this was supposed to be Dodgers-Mets. And here the Padres are. So we'll see.
And you know what? You're not going to see any SDs next to Atlanta or Philadelphia in the bracket going forward either. But that's –
Here's why you might. Somebody's going to try to be cute and be like, oh, these guys are hot right now and here, and they'll talk themselves into it. But we're not going to see, no one in their right mind is going to pick the Padres over this team that has been so experienced in the playoffs and has owned them for so long.
Yeah. Well, those are the same people who picked the Chargers to beat the 49ers in the Super Bowl.
What sport is this that you're speaking of again?
The postseason's expanded, so is the podcast. If you've hung around this long, thank you. And we will be back on Friday morning, and we'll talk about what's ahead for the weekend. The one thing we know is the Padres will have a game Friday night at Petco. I would assume be Friday evening, and it should be a fun couple days in LA and fun to see some playoff baseball back in San Diego.
Thanks, everybody.